Hi, everyone. I'm Doug Harrington, and welcome to our Learn and Be Curious podcast. If you would have told me 5 years ago how much time I would spend talking about AI, I would not have believed you. AI is literally touching every single part of our business. It's touching how we do the work behind the scenes at Amazon and customer service and seller support and fraud and abuse and catalog operations. It's transforming how our builders build software. One part that you're all seeing as well that's super exciting is how AI is transforming the shopping experience, and especially the conversational shopping experiences that we've been offering through things like Rufus and Alexa for Shopping. I'm super excited today to talk about that. We've got the perfect guest, Rajiv Mehta, who is VP of Conversational Shopping at Amazon. And I'm excited to talk about Rufus, talk about Alexa, and talk about where we're going next. But before we get started, Rajiv, I always like to start with a simple question, which is tell me your Amazon story.
Sure. I've been here almost 12 years now, and I started Amazon actually out in Singapore. So we moved to Singapore for my first role.
Really?
Yeah, it was to lead Kindle content for India. We were out there for almost 4 years, and we built that business, had the great luxury of being kind of like employee number three on that team.
That's awesome. Where were you living before you moved to Singapore?
Yeah, so we were living in northern New Jersey.
Okay.
And at that time, I was working actually for Samsung Electronics before I joined Amazon. So so we were on the East Coast of the U.S. We moved out to Asia, and then we moved back to the U.S. here in Seattle.
And what was it like? Was there other Amazonians out in Singapore, or was it just you and
In the retail business, like our business, it was fairly small. AWS had a pretty good presence in Singapore at the time, a lot of sales and marketing functions. But in our business, I think I was the most senior leader at the time.
Yeah.
But it was very small. I think I was maybe employee seven or eight on what is now Amazon stores.
Yeah. And now you're kind of steeped in Amazon culture and our leadership principles and all that. But how did you learn the Amazon culture in Singapore as a new employee?
I embraced kind of our writing culture. Like I learned that our writing culture actually is a good manifestation of our leadership principles because it's a good way to get feedback really, really quickly when your time zone shifted, where you don't get the hallway interactions or you don't get as much kind of in person. I think I was lucky to have a handful of really strong mentors who I could lean on early. So some of our kind of existing like ST members were actually my mentors early in the day. And that infrastructure was set up for me really well, being time shifted.
Yeah, you said you were in Russ's org. And if you're working for Russ, he is like one of the OGs. And so he's a fantastic teacher. Of the Amazon culture.
Absolutely.
Great.
And then we moved back to the US and I joined the Alexa shopping team and was part of the Alexa shopping team for the better part of maybe 3.5 years, where we built a lot of the features that we customers use today on Alexa shopping, like reordering things or Alexa shopping
all
list.
The voice control.
The voice control for Echo devices.
And can I maybe just slow us down here? The confusing part of this conversation is that on Amazon, our conversational shopping assistant has been called Rufus.
Right.
Recently, we integrated Rufus and Alexa together.
Right.
And we call it Alexa for Shopping.
Right.
What you're referring to now is kind of the original Alexa for Shopping capabilities, which was when you would talk to your Echo Show or any one of your devices and talk to Alexa.
Yes.
You know, that's what you'd be talking.
And that was even before we had any of these conversational capabilities inside the Amazon app or on our website like we do today.
What attracted you to go to the devices team and Alexa? And again, this is pre-LLM, pre-AI. Right. You know, what got you to say, that's the next role for me?
Yeah, I think a lot of it for me was that it just seemed like a hard problem. I get a lot of energy from hard problems or things that haven't been done before. Mm-hmm. So doesn't necessarily mean I'll be successful at them, but I do believe that I get a lot of energy from it. Yeah. So I'm always seeking out like things that haven't been done because it's kind of more of an open playing field on how you solve a problem.
Yeah.
Like I'm not good at, I would say I don't gravitate to finding problems and then making them like incrementally better. Like it's more the open field stuff. Yeah. So it was one of a handful of things that seemed like really hard problem, interesting space. And then about 3 years ago, I joined the search team and what eventually then transitioned into leading conversational shopping, which was Rufus and now Alexa for shopping.
Yeah, amazing. You really did jump into, that was like proto conversational shopping.
Right.
It was less a conversation than a single turn or two.
It was like, you were issuing commands, right? Like
yes.
You were issuing a command and then the AI was doing something for you and then you were issuing another command as opposed to kind of a multi-threaded or even multi-step conversation that was kind of happening in serial.
Yeah. Wow. So you got to see it to do a huge transition then from this kind of old way of doing it to a new way of doing it. Maybe we could start there, which is, you know, Rufus was that transition for us in the retail side,
right,
which is that let's go from like a kind of issuing commands to having a conversation.
Right.
And maybe just tell me, what was the origin story of kind of Rufus and, you know, what were the early days like?
Yeah, the early days, I still remember this because I wrote the first PR FAQ for Rufus.
You did?
I did. And we reviewed it, and then we reviewed it again, and then we reviewed it again. It took a few turns. I mean, it needed work.
Jeff used to say that, like, that was always... That was a mark of actually a great PR FAQ. Like the more times you could review it, the better. He said, if it gets better every time, I want to review a PR FAQ 20 times. And it's not a defect. It's
right.
Like, as long as it's getting incrementally better each time.
Yeah. And I felt like we were definitely getting better.
ChatGPT had blown onto the scene late 22. And
right.
We could all see, wow, this new technology is amazing. And we're all like, okay, let's... Bring
what
it to
do?
Customers. Yeah, let's bring it to customers so they can shop better. What was the? What did you get right in that first PR and what did you get wrong?
Yeah, I think what we got wrong, I'll start with the wrong, I'll start with the right. Kind of classic
vocally
style.
Self-critical.
Yeah, I'll be vocally self-critical about it. What we got wrong was how customers would actually use the product. Like we actually thought back in those days that we could be most helpful by having these long, long conversations with customers. And by the way, customers may get there.
Yeah.
But what we didn't realize was just how helpful we could be helping customers navigate kind of existing selection and information that was actually in the store today, but was just hard to access.
Yes.
So even today, like one of our greatest use features is helping customers just get basic product questions and answers.
Right. Does this have battery?
How wide is this bookshelf? Is it waterproof?
Yeah,
right?
I ask those questions all the time.
Yeah.
Are the pages, I did it this week, are the pages perforated in this notebook that
I'm
buying?
And I'm sure it's there. Like that information is available in our store or on the product detail page. But many times for customers, it's just hard to find because you don't know what that customer wants. You don't know where to position that information.
So the original PR FAQ, I'm trying to remember back. I have the same thing. I have great pride in the PRs that I wrote. Okay. But what did you get right?
I think what we got right in the original PR FAQ, or maybe version 17 of the era,
eventually
got right, was we knew we had to get the technology and the capabilities of what Rufus or now Alexa could provide kind of throughout the shopping experience.
Yeah.
We were just not good at it back then,
mm-hmm.
Which is why we put it into an individual chat layer that a customer could access. But we knew we had to get it onto the detail page and the search results page and other pages because that is where the traffic is. That is where customers are engaging with us.
Yeah.
So we were right. But I think we were ahead of where the technology was at the time to be helpful across all these different places.
Yeah, fantastic. Anything else?
I'd say the other thing we got right was our original UX designs were remarkably close to where we ended up.
Yeah.
There was a lot of polishing that went on, so I don't want to take that away from anybody. But there was a lot of our original kind of design patterns actually played out and are actually still in production today. So I'm pretty proud of the team for actually kind of conceiving something very new and it kind of lasting and being durable for a good amount of time.
That's right. That whole idea that you could kind of ask a question, that bottom layer would slide up, that you could engage on it and slide back down again.
That's right.
Okay, so take me back. So you write this PR FAQ. We review it 100 times.
Right.
you finally limp in with the final and say, this is it. I've got it. This is. And then how do we actually go? How do we build it?
Yeah. So there were a couple of things. One is that that I've learned with almost every PR FAQ I've written at Amazon is you kind of start building in parallel.
Yeah.
Like if you start doing this serially where you try to get a polished PR FAQ and you're seeking some sort of like approval, you've probably burned through 6, 8, 10, maybe 20 weeks worth of calendar time. Mm-hmm. So we started building in parallel because we believed we were kind of directionally moving in the right place. That was one. The second piece was we actually at that time, unlike using a state-of-the-art foundational model that existed in the world somewhere, we built our own.
We built our, that was crazy.
Yeah, it was, that was actually, to think of it, the fact that we could do it was bonkers.
Yes.
That we could actually get enough data, train a model, and get it to do intelligent things for customers when they're shopping was a huge feat.
Yeah, back then, everybody's mental model was the way that this was going to work was there was going to be a single model.
Right.
And you just needed to have a super smart model.
That's right.
Like one model that could converse and know everything. And we said, okay, let's build a model. We gave it a whole bunch of Amazon data. It's our catalog and all of our customer reviews and everything in it. And so this is going to be a model that knows shopping, especially shopping on Amazon, better than any other model out there.
That's right.
Sounds easy.
Sounds easy. And we went through multiple iterations of tuning that model. And it was almost like over the course of maybe 4 or 5 months, it was like watching a toddler like graduate from college, right? Where initially, the smallest things that this model could do, like, you know that the bookshelf, when you go to a bookshelf detail page was 36 inches wide, and it knowing that, like, we'd all be clapping. It's like you'd be clapping when a toddler stood up, right? But then we got past it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I can remember some of those early meetings. We'd get in there and we would be like talking to it. You know, and we'd be in that big conference room, we'd talk to it, we'd be like, Is that shirt red? And would be like, yes. And we'd be like, whoa.
Exactly.
And then we go to a blue shirt and say, is this shirt red? And it would say, yes.
Yes. That's right.
Like, oh my God.
Yes, yes. It only knows how to say yes.
So we started with Rufus a few months ago. We integrated Rufus and Alexa for shopping. And so now maybe we'll just call it Alexa so that we can have a simplified conversation. But like this past year, Alexa, it's just gotten so much better and so much smarter. And what's changed from now to when we started?
Yeah, I think a couple of things have changed. One, which is, I think, super obvious, which is like customer expectations have gone up like 100x from where we started. Our own expectations have gone up that much. But I think what we've done is we've gone from a dedicated shopping model that that we built to we now use a mixture of a state-of-the-art model from outside of the company as well as a bunch of internal models that are kind of bespoke to a certain set of features that give us the ability now to do a broader set of things with Alexa. It also gives us the ability to optimize across like latency and answer quality. So an example of that is like when you go to a detail page today and you tap on the price history link, that's going to a special model and a special agent that's being called just for price history.
Yeah.
And what makes that great is that it's super low latency. So you tap you tap it and you immediately get some price history information on the ASIN. But it's also super low cost. And it's super rich because it's that specific model is only trained on price history. So it's a very different architecture than the one that we had when we first launched Alexa.
And I think that mixture of experts, mixture of models or mixture of experts is how the industry in general has transitioned as well, which has been super helpful for what you said, because now we can basically, we can apply the intelligence that we need based on the query that's been asked.
That's right.
And so maybe it's some question that we've seen 1,000 times, kind of we know the answer, we can get it to you blindingly fast, or it's something very new or novel and we're going to take some time and work it through. And in fact, you can now say, I'm going to go on a camping trip in the Pacific Northwest next year. I've never been camping before. Tell me what I need. It's going to take a little bit of time and think about that, you know, 5 or 6 seconds, and it's going to come back with a wonderful answer.
It will. And we've added personalization recently, which I think is a big difference from where we were back when we first launched, which is now Alexa is learning continuously about my preferences. It remembers things that I've told it. It remembers things that I haven't even told it, but it can kind of infer based on my shopping behavior, the conversations I've had with it, which only makes it so much more magical.
Yeah, I think that personalization is probably, that's the part that still just delights me. You know, the model has gotten so much more sophisticated, or models under the cover have gotten so much more sophisticated. But this idea that it really knows already what I like, or what I've been interested in or following. And it can really just give you, like I was just asking it for book recommendations last week. And, you know, I read a lot. I've always got three or four books going. And I was said, I'm interested in a fiction book. I love Westerns. I love that kind of, you know, post-Civil War kind of time period. And I said, you know what I've read, what I bought over the last 20 years, you know, what should I think about? And it came back with just an amazing list on kind of thematically four or five different big themes that I might want to explore and titles that I had never, some authors that I had read before, but titles that I had never read before. It was just amazing. And it was, and the fact that it converted, because, you know, you liked, you know, True Grit and you liked this and, it connected all the dots for me. I actually saved it. I was like, I got to go back to this. This is going to be my reading list for like the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think customers are finding it, and I'm finding it super helpful. The more we show on those sorts of questions that customers have, the work that we're doing. Yeah. Because understanding why we're recommending what we're recommending, I think is getting to be even more important, as opposed to just showing a set of recommendations, being able to tell a customer like, well, because you've shown an interest in this or you've shown a preference in this, that is the reason I'm recommending it. Because then it also gives you the opportunity to edit it, which is like, hey, you may have gleaned that I like, you know, Western, like, you know, fiction or nonfiction.
Yeah.
But I really don't. It's actually an incorrect assumption. So let's not do that anymore and give me something else that I'm looking for.
So we've gotten better reasoning. Yep. We've got personalization. What else has changed in the model?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's changed significantly, like since we originally launched, is we've also integrated the technology into many places across the shopping experience. So when we first launched, there was on the navigation bar, you used to be able to press a button on the lower right and it would invoke Rufus or now Alexa.
Yeah.
What we've done over time is that we've now embedded that across the store. So there's little pills that are sitting throughout the detail page or on search results page. We've now even started to, on certain queries, right from the search bar, you could type something in and you will get a conversational response, because we believe that that response is much more helpful to customers than maybe the search results they would have gotten previously.
Yeah. I love that, the search bar. So give me an example of like something you would type in the search bar that we would just do traditional search results, and something where Alexa would step in and say, I'm going to give you an answer.
So I think, you know, one of the biggest queries that we get that isn't product seeking, like a customer looking for a specific product right on the search bar, is just wanting to get order status information.
Yeah.
Like, where, you know, when are my AA batteries arriving?
Yes.
And customers would type some form of that question right into the search bar. And what we would do classically is that we would just show you AA batteries as search results, but we wouldn't answer your question, which is like, when are they actually arriving? You may even get a banner at the top of search results that would kind of be a place that you could tap that would navigate you to your orders page. But today we'll just, you know, if you type in, where are my AA batteries, we'll answer the question for you right there below the search bar and tell you, like, you know, here are the batteries you ordered and they're arriving, you know, today by 5 p.m.
Yes.
Which we think is such a better experience for customers.
Yeah.
Because all that tapping is multiple steps for them.
Yes.
So that's an example. There's other questions where you could be asking kind of an information seeking question, which is like, what is the difference between a regular coffee machine and a cold brew coffee machine?
Yeah.
Again, classically, we would show you a bunch of coffee machines, right, in search results. But what we do now is we answer the question and we give you product recommendations that are both kind of standard coffee machines. And by the way, those are personalized. So we might know something about you, like you live in a small apartment in, you know, in a city, and that might mean you want a small coffee maker versus here's some cold brew options for you as well, because you're maybe looking for single cup cold brew options.
Yeah. Yeah. It's given me, like, I have much more, I just put anything I want in that search bar now.
That's right.
I feel like I can ask any question.
We also find that customers have started to, and it's still early days, but have started to use it even for non-shopping events. The other thing that we see a lot of customers asking for is when, you know, a author is releasing a new book, or a designer that you follow is releasing a new piece of clothing, or, you know, a new movie is being released by, you know, a producer or a director that you really enjoy.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. So I'm shopping all the time and I'm always like reaching out to you. I mean, your title is VP of Conversational Shopping. Did you make up that title, by the way?
I did.
That's pretty. Like 5 years ago, there was no VP of Conversational Shopping or anything. So I'm shopping all the time. I'm sending you notes and I do like to like push the bounds of the whole thing. Right. And it's such a crazy technology because we don't program it to do all this stuff in advance. We program it to have all these capabilities. And then we have to discover what it's doing and how it's... Like I was doing one the other day. I took a picture of my fridge.
Yep.
And I sent Alexa. I said, Alexa, here's what's in my fridge. Suggest a weekly grocery order for me based on what you see in there. And she did a fantastic job. I mean, it was, and she kind of, she was, you know, she inferred a bunch of stuff about, you know, she's, oh, looks like you guys cook for two. Looks like you kind of lean towards, you know, fresh foods and kind of clean foods because it saw some kind of oat milk in there. And then suggested a really interesting list of kind of the proteins, the fruits, the vegetables, and some other stuff. And I thought that was like an amazing kind of like, I don't just have to use words. I can use pictures too.
Yeah, I we did this over the weekend. My son did it over the weekend, which is he's got in our library, he's got two bookshelves that are full of books, right? And so between the two bookshelves, there's maybe 200 books. And he took a picture of the bookshelf and loaded it up to Alexa and said, what should be the next thing I should read?
Ooh, well, I'm going to try that one.
Yeah, try that one.
I'm going to take a picture of my bookshelf.
Take a picture of the bookshelf. And it came back with some great recommendations, both in terms of the fact that he's a bit of a sports nut. So he gave him a bunch of sports recommendations. But it also took into consideration like upcoming like events, like, you know, the NFL season's only a couple of months away and it looks like you like football. And here's some like recent books that have launched. So I thought that was like really helpful that he was able to just do that. One of the things that we keep working on is there's a lot that that Alexa can do now, but not all of our customers know about this, right? And it's one of our biggest challenges right now is to get that more in front of customers because all of these capabilities that we've been talking about, all of them may not be super important to all customers, but many of them we believe will be important to many customers. And that's our trick is to also start to get this more and more visible to more customers so they can understand that, oh, like it's now super simple to get a book recommendation. You can just take a picture of a bookshelf in your bedroom and get a recommendation as opposed to having to tell it a bunch of things as well.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Remember when I did that prompt or that question, I said, Alexa, look at all the socks I've ever bought and lay them end to end.
That's right.
How many miles will they stretch?
That's right.
Was I the first person to ever ask Alexa that question?
You were. I think you were, at least for socks. I've asked questions similar to that on other categories that I purchase. Yeah. But yes, for socks, definitely. That was pretty important.
For me, who's really into socks, that was a very important question
to know. Like I asked it myself too, but it was not an impressive answer.
It was like a block or something.
It was measured in feet, right? As opposed to, I think it was miles.
It was miles for me. Switching gears, what's been really hard in this journey or a particularly difficult episode in this journey?
Yeah, I think one of our difficult episodes was, I think we made the right decision in building our own foundational model.
Yeah.
Because it was the smartest thing that we could build at the time that was the most capable for the use cases that we had.
Yeah.
But what we didn't realize was kind of the rate and pace that the industry was moving. And that forced a bunch of kind of technological changes and shifts in our strategy to get us to where we are today.
I think what's also interesting is we kind of started benchmarking ourselves against other traditional retailers and the kind of conversational shopping experiences that we were offering.
Right.
And we were head and shoulders above everybody. Most people weren't offering anything, or they were offering kind of a generic plugin on top of it. But we've really gotten to the point where the customer expectations are more set by the generalized LLM services that aren't kind of dedicated for shopping in particular.
That's right.
But they were doing pretty good at shopping. And we got inspired by that and the multi-model construct and discovered that we could deliver a better experience if we could have a mixture of models. What people really give us, especially high marks for, is not just the answer quality, which is strong, but the personalization, because that's we know so much about it, and then the helpfulness, because we integrate right into the conversation the shoppability.
That's right.
Like, it's no longer do I have to like have a conversation and then go figure out where to buy all this stuff. The stuff you want to buy is right there in the conversation.
That's
people,
right.
And people really love that.
Yep.
That's great. Crystal ball time. I find this space so interesting. Like, where are we headed? Like, I know you don't know the future.
Right.
You've got like a little bit, maybe a slightly better peak than most, but like, and you can pick any time frame. You can pick kind of next year, or you pick 5 years from now or 10 years. Where are we headed?
I think customers, both in our experiences as well as what they experience on the internet in general, are moving to a world where anytime they see a box that they can type something into, they will just type whatever is on their mind.
Yes.
And then they expect, once they hit the enter key or the submit key, that it will do something magical for them. And the magical part is actually just honoring the request or the action or the question that they have. So I really believe that we're headed into a world that more and more customers are going to type whatever they want, and we got to do something helpful with it. And I think that's very different from the world that we've been in, because I think customers on Amazon specifically, they know how to navigate our stores.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what to type and they know what not to type.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're about to open the aperture here very, very quickly, as quickly as we can on what they can type. And I think that'll just unlock a lot of goodness for them. Because right now it's sometimes a lot of work to find the thing that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Like, I think the vast selection, as an example, that we have is awesome for customers.
Yeah.
But it also makes it sometimes difficult to find the thing that you're looking for, because you're just unfamiliar with the category you're shopping in.
I agree with everything you just said. In my office, I have an old Sears and Roebuck catalog from, 1910 or something like that. Mm-hmm. This was the catalog they used to send around all the whole country.
It's like a
mail order. Mm-hmm. And you'd flip through it, and it probably has, 20,000 items in it. And everything from clothes to consumables to, you can buy like a house, you can buy all kinds of stuff in there. And it's got little descriptions. They got a title, a blurb, a number. You don't really add to cart, but you, in the back, they've got an order form, and you would write down the number and order the product, and then they'd send it to you. I bought that book, and I used to bring it into meetings and used to say, imagine the Sears and Roebuck guys. You know, they've got this, 20,000 items. They're doing great. They're just like, okay, now we want to go sell 100,000 items or 200,000 items. But their format doesn't scale.
That's right.
It's like you can't now send a book like this big say, oh, expect customers to shop through it. And so they had kind of found the limit of that format. And, physical stores have limits too. A physical store can get, a big superstore can get up to 100,000 items. And then it's like that format doesn't really work beyond there. Now, the magic of Amazon was this format allowed us to scale to millions of items, hundreds of millions of items. But I do feel like we had found too that at some point, you have so much selection, and we needed some kind of new technology to make it possible for individuals to find the best products for them inside of an ever-increasing selection of product. I think this technology is that. I think this is the technology which says, oh, just like Sears and Roebuck was going to find it difficult to imagine growing 10x with a catalog structure, I think the traditional search bar and search results was going to make it very difficult to do 10x of the selection, but not this new world. This new world where I can have a conversation and my particular kind of needs and wants and preferences, for socks, which might be different for yours, we can literally aspire to hold all the socks around the world, and you can have a conversation and not feel like it's a laborious way to work through that sock pile.
Yeah, I think it just feels very natural, right? To me, it's always like, if you walked into the world's largest sock store, like physical store, and you were talking to a salesperson there, and they were, you know, super knowledgeable about socks.
Yeah.
They could help you navigate that store in seconds, right? Because that's what they're really, really good at. But now if you just take that sock store example and do it at scale across all products and categories, that's what we've got to just become, that expert salesperson across all of that.
And of course, it's much easier because if you were in the physical sock store, they might be like, I've got the best sock for you, but we've got to walk 15 minutes to go find it.
That's right. That's right.
And then I do like your notion that people will start to expect that they can just engage with Alexa on any topic, type anything. I think looking a little bit further, I would say, I'll plus it up with two, which is I think they're going to be able to expect to engage with Alexa anywhere. Like I think what's going to be amazing is the expectation is I can engage Alexa, you know, when I'm in my kitchen, when I'm in my car, when I'm, you know, shopping for something, when I'm watching on my television. Sure. Like if a need arises and I want to think about it, I can give that information to Alexa, whether or not to do it now or do it later or something. So I think this technology is going to be amazing for extending where people can engage with Alexa and therefore with the Amazon store. We're going to look back 5 years from now and, you know, let's say the house is kind of reordering its regular supplies for itself. We're going to think that's totally normal. Right now, it seems like science fiction and it seems someplace really wacky. I don't know exactly how it's all going to play out, but at least I'm holding it all lightly right now for how the future could unfold.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting. There was a time at Amazon where we'd get something to a customer's home in a few days, and it seemed like, wow, this is amazing. And now it's, you know, we're measuring in minutes in many cases, right?
It's so fun.
So just pushing down the curve on a lot of these things, I think, gets us incredible step function improvements.
Rajeev, before we go, I'm going to give you one opportunity to ask a question for me.
Sure.
This is our flip the script moment. It has to be an easy question, though.
Okay, I'll make it easy. I'll try. One of the things I always struggle with is just time, right? There's a lot to do. So I always ask myself the question, like, what would I do if I had one more hour every single day? And I'd almost flip that to you and say, like, if you had an extra hour, and again, I'm maybe make this work-oriented as opposed to something else. I have, like, tons of hobbies, and I'd love to spend more time on my hobbies, too.
Right. But I'm going to go for a run.
Yeah, exactly. What would you do if you had an extra hour every day? What would you what would you do with it?
Well, I like the premise of the question, too, which is I think time is super important. Yep. If I'm crunched and, like, my calendar's gotten out of control and I'm just, like, I'm feeling like I'm underwater, the first thing that gives way is what I like to call my wander period, where I can just wander and follow my curiosity for whatever I'm interested in. And a lot of times that'll be shopping. You're at the tail end of a lot of my wandering, where all of a sudden I'm just trying new things and shopping. It might be that I've read about something or heard about something, and I just want to spend time like learning more about it. It could be writing a PR FAQ myself. I wrote one about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I hadn't written one in a while, and I had this idea in my head that was like, oh my God, this would be awesome. And I spent a couple hours just sitting down there writing it. And I call it wandering because, you know, it's not the most urgent stuff. I sometimes don't even know what it's going to lead to. And so it's the stuff that tends to get squeezed out of my schedule if things start to rush in.
That's right.
Now, I have learned from myself, which is that wandering is super important for me. It's super important for my mental health because I love that. Building and inventing is like my favorite part. But it's also important for me to make good decisions. And like, you know, I think for me, for my job, making a few good decisions is kind of the most important thing I can do. And so giving myself time to learn and wander and explore things is really important. And when I feel like I don't have that extra hour, then I learned this from Jeff Wilkie, who's one of my, you know, mentors and old bosses. And he taught me about it early on. And I follow his practice, which is, he called it his mechanisms list. And I've built the same thing. It's a spreadsheet of all the regular meetings and time commitments that I have. Here's daily, here's weekly, here's monthly, here's quarterly, here's annually. And when I get out of balance and I've got too much going on, I sit down with the team and we start to either cross stuff off or we move things that are weekly to monthly to quarterly. And he taught me, as you're growing at Amazon, as scaling, that that's a critical part of your job, that you cannot expect that, you know, your current approach for managing the business is going to work 6 months from now or a year from now. And he is absolutely right. I still don't go more than 9 months without having to revisit that list and retool and reschedule. And a lot of it is just to make sure that I have room kind of to do that wandering side of the equation. Yeah. I personally, I can have like 4 to 6 things that I put on high frequency. And right. High frequency would be like every 2 weeks,
right.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And I think the teams are probably happy that I can only manage kind of 4 to 6. You've been in that soup for a while now.
I have.
So you're in my high frequency.
I have the high frequency bucket.
But that's fine. Okay. Final question for me. Everyone's working on AI right now. AI is everywhere. Why are you excited about working at AI on AI here at Amazon?
Yeah, I think that comes down to a couple of things. Like one is... one is that we have the resources to invest because a lot of these areas are still a little speculative, mm-hmm. right? Which means you don't have a clear path, like a straight line for success. You've kind of got to do multiple things in parallel.
Yeah.
But doing multiple things in parallel requires multiple investments in parallel. Yeah. So I think one is that we can invest in it. And then I think the last piece is that it's very easy for me to relate with our customer obsession because it's just an easy way to work backwards. It's just to think backwards from like, what would a customer find helpful? What are we changing for the customer that makes this better? Like, why would a customer find this valuable? Like those set of kind of core questions that we kind of come back to and ask all the time, I think it's just such good grounding as opposed to, I think, questions that maybe some others would be asking and why it makes it awesome to do so at Amazon, which is how do we make money with this?
Yeah.
And I think the tenet that I believe in and I think all of us believe in is, well, if we solve customer problems,
yes.
All of that will follow.
Yeah.
But if we're not solving a customer problem, that will never follow.
Yeah.
So it's also a very easy thing to get energized about because we're all customers.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the customer obsession leadership principle. And I think it is super important in this area and super powerful for us. People, you know, we talk a lot about how we're inventing on behalf of customers. They're mm-hmm. not going to tell us exactly what they want, but we are going to have to understand what they might want and then go invent on their behalf. And then we can use tools like WebLab to see if we're right or wrong mm-hmm. and how to evolve. But I think that that mindset and that culture is going to help make sure that we continue to push in the right direction. That other companies, as you said, might be focused on, hey, you know, what's just the coolest new technology I have? I'm not sure how people are going to use it, but I want to put it out there. Or they're focused on the monetization side of the question. I think keeping us focused on building on behalf of customers is unique to Amazon mm-hmm. and going to lead us in the right direction. Jeff used to have this phrase that he thought customers are delightfully discontent and because they're always wanting more. And what was kind of magical yesterday becomes kind of old hat tomorrow. And they're just like, okay, what's next? And they're using other services and things. So they're always like, but I can do this there, but I can get that there. And so we listen to customers and we're always saying, okay, how can we satisfy them in a way that nobody else is satisfying them. I think it's uniquely powerful in this moment where we've got so much invention ahead of us.
I agree.
Well, thank you so much, Rajiv, for coming and joining us on the Learn and Be Curious. I was really excited to learn what the VP of Conversational Shopping does here at Amazon. That's fantastic. And, you know, thanks for everything you've done. You've been, it's an amazing journey. I now realize it was a bit of a stroke of luck that you ended up in the conversational shopping world, given where you had started. But I think that was a fantastic arc and coming through the Alexa, traditional Alexa, and then really kind of helping get Rufus born and Alexa for shopping. So I share your excitement for this space and I kind of share your wonder. Like, I feel like as smart and capable as Alexa has gotten, we are still remarkably at day one for what this technology is and how customers are going to use it. And so I'm really excited to have you leading the team in this particular area. I think you do a fantastic job and I'm excited what you guys invent next.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great. And thank you for joining us on this latest episode of our Learn and Be Curious podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go ahead and follow us because we have new episodes coming all the time. If there's any people or topics that you're particularly interested in, send us a note as well, and we'll consider them for future episodes. Take care, everyone.